All right, I'm going to call this meeting of the House Elections Committee to order. A quorum is present. The first item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes of the February 8th, 2023 meeting. Representative Greenman, would you like to move approval of the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Vice Chair Greenman has moved approval of the minutes for February 8th. Is there any discussion to the minutes? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The minutes are adopted. The first bill on the agenda is House File 559, Representative Frederick's bill. Representative Frederick, would you like to move that House File 559 be laid over for possible inclusion?
That is my motion, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Frederick has moved that House File 559 be laid over for possible inclusion. Welcome to the committee. Please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Under current state law, if there is a trainee election judge, which means someone who is 16 or 17 years of age, currently in high school, they can be trained to serve as a trainee election judge. If in the case, let's say somebody's birthday is in December, and they get trained in to be a trainee election judge, they turn 17, and they get trained in by March, and they are able to serve in the primary elections, but then they graduate high school in June, their birthday is not until that following December. And under current state law, they are not able to continue to serve as a trainee election judge because they graduated high school in that year's election. So what this bill does is allows someone who is trained to be a trainee election judge to continue to be a trainee election judge through the November election until they turn 18, to which they can become a full election judge. So some of the advantages to be able to have trainee election judges in the polling place is that they bring a lot of different energy. They can sometimes bring skills with technology. There can be language that they also bring to the polling place to assist people in voting. But this is just looking to fix that gap where they can no longer serve after they graduate high school, and just says that they can until they turn 18.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. We have two people who signed up to testify on this bill. First is Karen Scheel. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Hi, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Karen Scheel. I am the youth coordinator with Minneapolis Elections and Voter Services. I hire and support the high school students who work as trainee election judges in the city of Minneapolis. We hire up to 400 for each election and provide them with the same training that regular election judges do. We've been doing this for 30 years since 1991, and we have had this issue with election judges who've been trained and who have served for a number of years and are no longer able to serve because they're still 17 when they graduate from high school. Out of our 250 judges for the primary in August of 22, this affected about a dozen students. Among the high school students we currently have on our rolls as election judges, this will affect about 20 of them in 2024 for the August election. We really value their services and how they are able to bring a lot of energy and technological savvy and language skills to the polling place. And I would really appreciate it, and I know other elections officials around the state would really appreciate a fix like this so that we are able to keep these young people engaged in their civic action, their civic engagement with elections. So thank you, and I hope you'll pass this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. Next is Eleanor Gikonge. Eleanor Gikonge here.
Eleanor hasn't arrived yet. She.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We'll go to discussion, and then if she shows up, I can reopen testimony. Is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, member discussion. Representative Torkelson, you have that look about you, like you have something
look,
to say.
I'm giving you the look, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Nothing against this bill, but for some reason, I think I'm channeling Representative Erdahl this morning. And a question for the author, have you considered a requirement that these high school students would have passed a civics course prior to serving as an election judge?
Representative Frederick.
I was not looking to change any of the requirements to currently serve as a trainee election judge. The bill does do some updating of the language, saying from high school students to just say trainee election judge to try to be able to be more clear that someone post-graduation, but I wasn't looking to add any extra requirements to it. However, I think civics instruction is a good thing, and hopefully our students can have some sort of civics instructions, even though it's not part of this bill.
Thank you.
Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks? Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, as we've heard, isn't going to impact a lot of people, but it is something that is going to be beneficial and will keep people engaged with the civic process. So I just ask for the committee's support.
Thank you, Representative Frederick. And I guess if your testifier does show up, if you could just maybe signal to me, and maybe with members' indulgence, we'll give them the opportunity to testify, even if we're on another bill, since they presumably came here just for that purpose. And based on how quickly this one's going, it looks like maybe we'll have time today. So thank you. With that, House File 559 is laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Frederick. Next is Representative Stevenson, House File 1370. Representative Stevenson, would you like to move that House File 1370 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee?
So moved.
Okay. Representative Stevenson has moved House File 1370 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Stevenson, to your bill.
Mr. Chair and members of the House Elections Committee, I am here today to urge that the legislature address the issue of deepfakes, in particular those that depict sexual content or used to influence the outcome of an election. Deepfakes are synthetic media that use advanced artificial intelligence techniques to manipulate video or audio content. These technologies make it possible to create highly realistic, yet completely false depictions of people doing and saying things that never actually happened. This has serious implications for privacy, free speech, and the integrity of our elections. One of the most concerning applications of deepfakes is the creation of non-consensual pornographic content, which is commonly referred to as revenge porn. This is a serious violation of privacy and can cause significant harm to the individuals portrayed in the content. In many cases, the victim is unaware that the content exists and may only discover it after it has been widely shared online. Another area of concern is the use of deepfakes in political propaganda and election interference. With increasing sophistication of these technologies, it's becoming easier to create convincing fake news or propaganda that is designed to manipulate public opinion. This could potentially have a significant impact on the outcome of elections, undermining the integrity of our democratic process. To address these challenges, I believe it's necessary for legislation to be enacted to regulate the distribution of deepfakes. This issue is a serious and growing concern that demands immediate action, and I urge this committee to take steps that protect the privacy, free speech, and democratic rights of all citizens. Thank you. Last, I will just note that the entirety of my comments to this point were written by the artificial intelligence software ChatGPT. My fabulous legislative assistant put in a prompt saying remarks to a House Elections Committee on the need to regulate deepfakes, and that is what came out. So to tell you about the advanced nature of artificial technology, everything I just said was written after a one-sentence prompt into ChatGPT. Very happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for that unsettling testimony. I don't have any testifiers who've signed up. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify to this bill? Okay, seeing none, member discussion. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I'd like to thank the author for the best testimony he's offered so far. My first question, a little more serious, is the source of this language. Where did it come from? How did it get here? Well, what did you use as an example? Something along those lines.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, in the spirit of unlikely inspiration, I will tell you that the original inspiration for this legislation for me was a bill that now Senator, then Representative Lucero introduced last biennium regarding deepfakes more generally. And in the run-up to this session, I looked into the issue a little bit more in conjunction with Mr. Dockendorf and others on our staff and looked at what other states have been doing on deepfakes. We found that two states, California and Texas, have enacted laws specifically related to elections and then the pornographic content that constitute this bill. And so the provisions in this bill are modeled after what was done in those states in conjunction with some provisions that already exist in Minnesota law. So we already do have a revenge porn statute in Minnesota. We did consult with House Research and determined that the existing revenge porn statute in Minnesota would be unlikely to encompass deepfakes. And so that's why this is a necessary augmentation of that. But so the answer to your question is California, Texas, and Minnesota law. And Senator Lucero.
Representative Ferguson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson, for that answer. You know, I have my daughter calls me an old fuddy-duddy, and I thought a deep fake was some kind of football play myself. But so this concept is a little new to me. You're creating a new crime here, and I'm a little surprised that this bill is starting here in elections, since the heart of the bill seems to be a new crime that's being established. There's probably nobody here that can answer the question of why it's starting here in elections, but it seems a little unusual. And I'm going to try to focus on the section of the bill that does deal with elections, and hopefully the next committee will delve more deeply into the criminal aspects of this, whether this is, you know, I wonder about the enforceability of this and the mechanics of the enforcement and the cost of establishing a new crime, but that's not really the venue of our committee. Looking at the election section of this bill, the thing that sticks out to me is the 60-day time window that's being established on line 5.11. We've seen in Minnesota's election process, once candidates have been endorsed or declared their candidacy, we often see, when there's enough money around, an attempt by the opposition, the opposite party to those candidates, to really establish a picture of that candidate in the public's mind early on by with negative advertising, the potential of using a deep fake in that early onslaught seems to me to be real, and so I'm questioning whether the 60-day window is long enough.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Torkelson, I appreciate the question, and it's something that I thought a fair amount about when we were developing this bill. The 60-day language is what was enacted in California. I think at least the reason why I support the narrow limitation is this is, of course, a free speech issue, and so we need to make sure that whatever restrictions we put on are narrowly tailored. Doing it right before the election, you don't have a time to discover the deepfake and rebut it, expose it, I think is the reason why there's an extra concern and why I think the bill is appropriate. So I certainly agree that, you know, right after an endorsing convention or even a primary election, you could see in August or earlier, you could see deepfake technology used to go after a candidate. There would be a lot of time for the candidate, the media, the party, others to respond and expose that. But I'm not dead set on 60 days. I don't think that that's a magic number, and would be happy to talk with you about a different time frame if that's something you're interested in.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Along those same lines, the language in that same line, state before an election, does an election include primary elections.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, it does include a primary election. We did have a conversation about whether it should include an endorsing convention, and I'm open to that.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one more follow-up along these lines. In some locations across the state, we see the ranked choice voting becoming popular. How does that fit into this time window? You know, when you have ranked choice voting, there are no primaries in most cases anyway that I'm aware of. Again, you know, the window of time, the interaction of candidates, the ability to use media, including social media, to define a candidate in the public's eye, it just presents a number of questions in my mind as to how this might work as we venture into new ways of electing.
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I think that in the situation where you have ranked choice voting, as you mentioned it, without a primary, you would have 60 days from the general election is when this would come to effect. And I would just say, just repeat generally, if you have a different time frame in mind, let me know. I'm happy to consider a different time frame in the bill. I'm very open to that.
Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. This is interesting to me. I had seen a video on artificial intelligence where they literally listened to someone's voice for, I mean, it was a short time, like 20, 30 seconds, and then they were able to duplicate that voice. And so at the same time, it was completely fascinating to me, and it was also horrifying to think of what people could do with that. So my question to you, Representative, is are you aware, is this happening, or is this just kind of being preemptive to try to stop something that might be happening in the future?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Altendorf, I am aware that both components of this bill are happening in the world, that there have been deepfakes created for the purposes of influencing political speech, and also even here in Minnesota, that there have been instances of deepfakes being used in a revenge porn type situation. So unfortunately, I'm not aware of deepfakes being used to influence an election in Minnesota 60 days before an election. That, I think, is entirely sort of prophylactic. But unfortunately, the pornographic piece of this is already real in Minnesota.
Okay. Thank you. One more question. Thank you, Chair. Representative, one more thing. Just out of curiosity then, do you know, so say this deepfake is put out there, like what is the tracing ability to find out the source of where that came from? And just taking a really weird twist on this, you know, could a campaign or something actually do it against themselves to try to, could there be this weird unintended consequence where, I mean, or but the question is, how can we trace that, like where the source came from?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Altendorf, interesting question. So what the first thing I would note is that the bill makes dissemination of a deepfake the prohibited act. You have to know it's a deepfake. So if you unwittingly disseminate a deepfake, if you say, oh my gosh, look at this thing I just saw on Twitter, retweet, that does not necessarily fall under it. You have to know that what you're spreading is misinformation. So you don't necessarily have to trace it all the way back to its source. You need to be going after the people who are spreading the deepfake, knowing at the time that it's a deepfake. Does that get to your question?
Representative Altendorf?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. Is this going to open us up to some gray area? You know, I guess I'm not sure because, again, I'm just thinking of the public. And how do you know it's a deepfake? Because as we're talking about, this is so real. And so that there's a real question of, you know, of the public's knowledge and how can we put on them this burden to decipher it themselves?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Altendorf, it's a great question. So the standard of knowing, so I work as a prosecutor when the legislature is not in session. And there are lots of provisions in law where you have to know something in order for it to be a crime. Great example would be related to receiving stolen property. So it's a crime to possess stolen property if you know that it's stolen property. But you can think of a lot of situations where you might buy something or have something and have no idea that it's stolen, right? Not criminal. Mm-hmm. So we have to prove up, and it can be very difficult from a prosecutorial perspective to prove that someone knows something, because knowledge, of course, happens inside your brain, and it's not like we can scan your brain and decide what you know, what you didn't know. We have to use other external sources of evidence to prove that you know or should have known something. And that's difficult. It probably should be difficult, mm-hmm. Given what's at stake.
Okay. No, thank you for that answer, and thank you, Chair. Just a very interesting topic today.
Yep. Thank you. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, and I really appreciate this bill. I think Lee Torkelson said, you know, when we think about potentially the use of this and the use that it could be to influence people and voters, it feels like there's the criminal penalties to punish people, and then there's the injunctive piece of mm-hmm. how do you stop it? How do you try to stop it before it creates that harm? And I'm wondering, and I think that the remedies are slightly different for the intimate parts or sexual acts and the election pieces. Is that, can you sort of talk about the difference in terms of that and whether you considered a civil remedy for the election pieces?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Greenman, the answer to your first question is that the different penalties are based off the fact that we already have a revenge porn statute in Minnesota, then we were trying to model the pornographic piece after the revenge porn statute. The penalties on the election side were more based off of what other states have enacted. And I am trying to recall, I thought we did put in an administrative or injunctive relief for the elections side. I certainly would favor that. I don't know if House Research can help me out here.
Mr. Garing?
Mr. Chair, Representative Stevenson, that, as the bill is drafted, I think it's just the criminal penalty. I don't see an injunctive portion of the bill.
Well, I would be happy to look at adding that in the next committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that, Representative Stevenson. I think the part of the goal here, and I think part of your goal here, is to prevent the harm and giving people the tools to do that. Love to continue talking to you about it and appreciate that explanation.
Thanks. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative, for this. My question was actually similar initially to Representative Greenman's, and would love to see us add that relief piece in on the election side as well, to be consistent. I think that mm-hmm. would be a good addition. I also just wanted to say as a side note that I do appreciate you bringing this forward. I know that technology is continuing to evolve and change and be pretty prolific. As a woman who has been in the technology sector for over 20 years, and many times often the only woman, I can tell you that I personally have been the target of some of what we're talking about here. I was very fortunate in that, as well as some of my female colleagues in the office, that none of the material that was found was disseminated publicly, that it was found and the individual responsible was terminated. But this was over 20 years ago. And it has not slowed down since. And I think the reason that I wanted to speak up and say that about this is that for many, many years, because we did not have anything on the books initially, while it was detestable and grotesque and flat out wrong, there was no way to prosecute it. And victims had literally no relief. And so I really appreciate that we are having this conversation, because I think all too long it was treated as a nothing crime, a victimless crime. It is not victimless, it is not appropriate, and it has never been okay, ever. Not for the purposes of elections, not for purposes of personal relationships to make people feel inadequate, to embarrass them, to seek revenge on them. There is no circumstance under which this is okay. And when we talk about elections specifically, it is particularly detestable as well, in that we are putting things out into the world with a malicious intent to stop the free and fair system of elections from disseminating appropriate information. And so I want to thank you for that today. But I would like to see possibly the additional relief phase on the election side as well.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Any additional member discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question that comes to mind is the responsibility of the platforms. We've seen some changes in that arena over the last year or two. Is there a way to attempt to hold the platform, whether it be TikTok or Twitter or whoever, responsible for filtering out some of these illegal, whatever they are?
Representative Stevenson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Torkelson, I agree with you that these platforms should be held more culpable than they currently are for the content that is being disseminated on them. And you might be aware of a bill that Representative Robbins has, for instance, related to algorithms of social media content targeting young people. This was a bill that got some attention last biennium, and she's reintroduced this year, and I intend to hear on the Commerce Committee as an aside. There are limitations in what we can do in federal law with regard to this. But I do think that there's more work to be done with regard to holding the big tech companies culpable for the content that they are distributing and the negative effects that that has.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think this is real stuff that needs to be addressed, and I think we'll be, I know I'll be supporting it moving on to the next committee. I do look at it as a bit of a work in progress, and I hope that you will entertain further discussion and potential amendments as it moves through the process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Any additional member discussion? Okay, seeing none, any closing remarks, Representative Stevenson?
Just to say that, yes, Representative Torkelson, I will entertain amendments and discussion to the bill. I think that it is something that we need to work on.
Okay. With that, Representative Stevenson renews his motion that House File 1370 be recommended to be re-referred to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion adopts. Hopefully we can get this solved before Skynet becomes self-aware. Yes. So I saw a few people walk in. Is Eleanor Gikonge here? Okay, yes. So with members' indulgence, I'd like to revert to House File 559 since we did have a testifier who tended to speak on that bill. So the bill's been laid over, but we'd be glad to get your testimony. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Eleanor Gikonge, and I will be talking about the 17-year-olds getting a chance to work as an election judge during the summer. So during the summer, after graduating high school, I was not able to work as an election judge because I was done with high school and I was not an 18-year-old. Me being an election judge for the past 2 years put me in state because I was not able to use my service to the community during the summer working as an election judge. I did not have the chance to use my skills, and at the same time there were more 17-year-olds who could be able to work as an election judge, and they speak different languages, and at that time the people needed more, like you guys needed more people to translate for the people who can't speak English. So if there is a possibility for 17-year-olds to work as an election judge after being done with high school, that would be a good thing to do. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Appreciate your testimony, and thank you for coming in. So once again, that was in relation to House File 559, which has been laid over for possible inclusion. We're going to change the agenda a bit. Next bill will be House File 1186, Representative Nash's bill, and I will move that House File 1186 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. There's also an A1 amendment. Did you want me to move that, Representative Nash?
Mr. Chair, if you would.
Okay, so I will move the A1 amendment to House File 1141. Did you want to explain the amendment, or does this just put it in the shape you'd like?
I can. It just puts it in the shape that I'd like, and I can explain it as I run through the bill.
Okay, so any discussion to the A1 amendment? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of adopting the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, the amendment's adopted. Representative Nash, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1186 solves a problem that I think you probably all have had phone calls on. During the previous election and then this past election, I got lots of phone calls, and I'm sure you did too, of people who were freaking out saying, I've just gotten 7 ballots in the mail today. They didn't. It was a ballot request form, and I think that a way that we can address this moving forward is to have a requirement for both the exterior envelope and then for the ballot request form itself to be very clearly marked that this is not an actual ballot. I mean, yes, we've gotten to that point where we have to remind people that this is not an actual ballot, but many organizations on both sides of the aisle do put out ballot request forms. It is completely legal. I'm not trying to change that at all. But what I'm trying to address is that there is a great deal of confusion when you go to your mailbox or people go to their mailboxes and they open it up and there's a ballot request form from potentially 5, 6, 7 different organizations all in one day. I think that the best thing that we could possibly do is to, on the outside of the envelope, say this is not an actual ballot, and on the potential interior contents, and if there's a, and says there's, if there's a sample ballot, that this is not an actual ballot. Pretty straightforward. It actually made it all the way into the omnibus last year that came up just a little bit short. So I would appreciate your support. And speaking of support, there is a letter in your packet from both the League of Minnesota Cities, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and MACO, all saying that they support this as well. And I can tell you from speaking to many elections administrators around the state that they appreciate this very straightforward bill that will make it easier for our constituents maybe to not pick up the phone and call one of us and kind of freak out. So that's the bill, Mr. Chair, and I would stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Questions? Representative Coulter.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't actually have any questions, but I just, Representative Nash, just wanted to thank you for bringing this forward. My wife teaches adult basic education and works with a number of new Americans, new citizens who haven't participated in a great many elections, and she was actually brought this same issue up to me because a number of her students were just very confused about what they were getting in the mail. And so I do think this will clear up some of that confusion. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Coulter. Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nash, I have a number of questions and concerns related to this. Just to begin with, I have there's a wonderful woman who lives in my district who I first met in 2018, who when I went to her door, she told me that she had always voted, but she wasn't sure that she could make it out to vote any longer. And I said, well, you could vote by absentee. And she said, I don't really know how to do that. I don't have a computer, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, I went and got her. I had some absentee ballot applications in my car. I went back, grabbed one, gave it to her. And every 2 years since then, she contacts me around election time, gives me a call, and asks for an absentee ballot application, which I mail to her. And I note, just as at the beginning level here, so would this apply to my letter to this constituent with the absentee ballot application, in particular, noting that, I mean, I don't want to be self-important, but I think I'm a government official. So when under Section 1, Subdivision 1, A2, line 1.13, it says the application or ballot has not been included at the request of a government official. Does that mean that I can't send her an absentee ballot application?
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The goal of that statement is that it does not originate with you, that it originates with the person who is requesting it. So obviously we have the ability to send those out, but it has to originate with their request.
Representative Stevenson.
Okay. Well, I think you might want to think about that language, because I think that the way that that's drafted, it is not clear, and I think that it actually could preclude. I almost read that as like, I can't send out absentee ballot applications as a government official. I guess the other question is, if I these types of communications that you're concerned about, are there any other disclaimer requirements already in law for these?
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the best of my knowledge, I don't know one. Perhaps Mr. Gehring, can he just gave me the head shake across the room that no, there is not. Again, Representative Stevenson, this is not a gotcha bill. This is for the good of the order, and we're trying to address, from your own side and our side as well, just a problem that we're seeing out there. I do understand that there may be things that we need to tighten up, but I know this is being laid over. And we can certainly work on that together, as we have on other bills, that we can make it so that you have comfort to make sure that you don't feel that you're being precluded from mailing your constituent a ballot request form at her request.
Representative Stevenson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative, I didn't mean to suggest it's a gotcha bill. I just mean to suggest that I have concerns about it.
Sure.
I regret that I didn't talk to you about it before today. I just I'm a little busy. Looking at it, I guess the other disclaimer piece that I'm wondering is, I would think that if I sent out absentee ballots, I would have to put a prepared and paid for thing on there. And I would think that if my political party sent out absentee ballot request forms, they would have to put a prepared and paid for disclaimer on there. Or if a political committee did it, they'd have to put a prepared and paid for. That's more what I was talking about with the disclaimer requirements. I think that that's already required on here. I also will just note that I'm a little concerned about the sample ballot language and what constitutes a sample ballot and how we're defining that. I just have a lot of questions about this bill, and maybe we can talk a little bit offline about it.
Thank you. Any additional member discussion? Representative Bonner.
Just a really quick clarification. So I actually do think this bill has some merit, because it is confusing a little bit. And I think there is a number of folks who've been confused getting these in the mail at what it actually is. And so I actually appreciate the effort on this. I do think I would like to see the disclaimer, as Representative Stephenson mentioned, to make sure that the folks sending these out are clear on who's sending them. I think that makes sense. But the other thing I wondered is, and I know that we try not to be too prescriptive, but on section 1.15, we talk about the sample ballot is enclosed, the sample ballot is not an official ballot. And I personally wonder if we should actually prescribe the language so it's consistent across these forms, that says something across the top, like it must say not a ballot. This is a application for a ballot, or whatever we want to say. I'm not wordsmithing it right now, but the point is, I wonder if from a consistency standpoint, it might be helpful to actually think about what language we want to put on there and be consistent, so that it is very, very clear across the top of each form. But I like the idea, so I'm actually hoping that we might be able to incorporate that into it.
Representative Nash?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bonner, that sounds like a great idea. I mean, the goal here is to remove any potential confusion when someone walks out to their mailbox and opens something from either your side of the aisle or my side of the aisle, trying to get them to fill out a ballot request form. There often are absentee ballot request forms that also include a sample ballot, and we want to make sure that nobody thinks that that's actually the ballot they're going to go and cast, because there has been a great deal of confusion, and I'd bet all the money in my wallet against all the money in your wallet that you'd, well, that's Garofalo, but I would offer that you probably have gotten these same calls as well, and we're just trying to make it easier for the people out in the districts to not be confused, because we want our elections to be very straightforward and unconfusing, and I think that this is a step in the right direction.
Representative Bonner, follow-up?
One last question. In the bill that we had last year, there was an additional provision, I think subsection B, I don't have it in front of me, and I'm wondering why we did not include that language in this version of the bill.
Representative Nash.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is as it was introduced the last time, and I think that was done in conference committee with the Senate, which I find a mysterious and confusing place. So I think I just went with the language that was as we introduced it the first time. So we certainly, as I know the chair has made clear, that this is going to be laid over for potential inclusion. I'm happy to work with that. If you really liked that, if you love the Senate, then we can talk about that as well. But so we can talk about if you like that language, we can try to find a way to find a home for it.
Okay. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Well, I know that we share that we do not always appreciate the efforts of the Senate. They do occasionally have good ideas, so it may be something we want to look at and see if it is meritorious to include it in the final draft. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, there was that once.
Yep. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing this forward. Any place that we're, you know, improving the cycle, and we all can agree, you know, not confusing voters is a very good thing. But after Representative Bonner brought up that statement, I just wanted to say, I think it would be very, very easy, instead of struggling with words, because then we have different font sizes, it could be in a different place, people could not see it. I would suggest adding into this bill simply a watermark is across the sample ballot, and that would hopefully eliminate all confusion. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm open to whatever, and really I am willing to work with everyone on this committee and in the legislature. Because this is just one of those problems that we all experience, and this is for the good of the order. So I appreciate the comments, and would stand for any further questions, Mr. Chair.
You're in luck. We have one. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Guessed.
And and thank you, Representative Nash. And I remember from last year the work, and I appreciate talking to you about this in the retiring room, because I think we heard, especially in 2020, yeah, when there was sort of a rush to make sure that folks could be able to vote safely with an absentee ballot. Lots of folks sent out lots of things. And I think that in addition to this, there's a few other things that we've done in this committee that we've been looking at that help address that problem too. Creating making the list public of folks who have requested absentee ballots that 48 other states do, we passed in this committee. And that will allow whoever is sending out these things to take folks off their list once they already know that folks have requested an absentee ballot. We've talked about the permanent early voting list, which for folks who want to get a ballot each time will take them presumably off that list, and if that's public. So I think that these are all, there's no one size fits all, but these are all pieces. And I appreciate the conversation. I think that I was just pulled up what we did, and one of the things there was some confusion about last year, and I think that we should work on, is what is a sample ballot. I think we throw that term around of, you know, a sample ballot, people will say, is like a lit piece with people's names on it, or there's some that actually look pretty close to a sample ballot. Since you're laying it over, I think we did do some work and got into conference committee a sort of definition of what is and is not a sample ballot that will be helpful, because I think we use language around here, but it is not always clear. So I appreciate the willingness of the author, of you, Representative Nash, to work on this. And I think that as we as a committee think about this issue, we should think about all the ways that we're ensuring that voters have clarity and that they have access to absentee ballot applications, that I think if the Secretary of State's folks were here would say is something that Minnesotans choose and prefer and like to have the ability to use, the absentee ballot process.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank you for hearing a Republican authored bill. It's appreciated, and hopefully this is a new habit that you're establishing.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. We'll see. No, I certainly endeavor to hear bills from all sides. So any additional member discussion? Representative Nash, any closing remarks?
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and to all here. I'm happy to work on the things that you've expressed as concerns or suggestions. Once again, we're trying to solve an actual problem. Oftentimes we write bills that maybe try to address a problem that sort of exists for a handful. Anybody who gets these in the mail is generally confused. So I think that if we can roll up our sleeves and work together, then we're in a good place. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Nash. With that, I renew the motion that House File 1186, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. So the next bill on the final bill, I should say, on the agenda is mine. So I will hand the gavel to Representative. What's up? Give me a moment.
Musical chair.
So, Madam Chair, I move that House File 1141 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Chair Freiberg moves that House File 1141 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Chair Freiberg, to your bill.
Thank you. So this is a cleanup bill updating references to envelopes used in absentee balloting. The changes are to update statute to reflect what local administrators call the envelopes and how they're referred to in instructions. These are technical changes to reflect how the envelopes are currently referred to by local administrators. I hope it's pretty straightforward, and I don't have any testifiers. I don't know if anyone's here from the public, but I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Freiberg, or Chair Freiberg. Before we turn it back over to you, are there any testifiers that any members of the public that wish to testify on this bill? Is there any discussion to the bill? Seeing no discussion, Chair Freiberg, any final comments?
I'll just quit while I'm ahead and renew my motion that House File 1141 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Chair Freiberg renews the motion that House File 1141 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay.
The bill's laid over.
Thank you. I guess I don't have any. I can just handle it from here, I guess. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, do you want me to turn the gavel back over to you? Do you want me
I guess sure. Maybe that's.
Okay. Lee Torgelson, 1 second.
I'm patiently waiting.
Yes, Representative Torgelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just since we have a couple of extra minutes, we've seen a number of bills pass or be laid over in this committee without controversy that have been bipartisanly supported, and I think that's a good thing. We're doing the work of the committee. I'm just going to interject that I hope that when you put your omnibus bill together, or maybe there may be more than one, I don't know, but that the non-controversial pieces be contained together without inserting controversial sections into that bill. You know, that would be, I think, an important step in maintaining the bipartisan nature of our work here in elections, and I'm just interjecting that publicly, as the public who may or may not be watching sometime in the future see the results of your efforts to put together an omnibus bill, that we understand that there are pieces here that quite a few pieces now that we've passed or approved without controversy and within a bipartisan fashion. And hopefully those will be grouped together is my wish, Mr. Chair.
Certainly have heard your wish. I'm a little unclear at this point exactly how we'll proceed, whether there will be one or two larger bills or how it will work, but I'll certainly keep that in mind as I move forward with any sort of larger bill. Any additional member questions or discussion? Okay. Seeing none, this meeting is adjourned. You have 40 minutes back in your day.